Mental health. How do we look after ourselves and our patients?
During the coronavirus pandemic, there's been a lot of media attention on mental health issues and that increased demand for mental health services. But it's not just about the mental health of our patients. We may have been dealing with high work volumes, stress, and that worry about contracting coronavirus as well as transmitting it to our family and loved ones. So today we're talking with Dr. Tom Patterson. He's a psychiatrist from the Adelaide Clinic. Tom, welcome to Drive Time Medical.
Hello, Jenny.
Tom, it's not just about our patients, is it? We have also had a lot of stress during this pandemic, us healthcare workers, and our colleagues have as well. Do you think there are barriers that prevent healthcare professionals from seeking mental health support for ourselves?
I think there are. I think we need to acknowledge, first of all, that the risk of having a major depression in life is 1 in 5. And just because you have a medical degree doesn't mean that you've somehow become inoculated against that. So doctors are as likely as anybody else generally in the risk of developing a depression. And I believe that about 70% of people think that depression is a weakness, that somehow they should just pull their socks up and get on with it. And so health professionals, because they are conscientious, because they want to care for other people, because they see themselves as being the person that other people come to, are likely to not recognise that they're struggling as early as perhaps somebody else would. I think there are some real issues about stigma. I think people are concerned that if you declare that you have depression, you might somehow be seen as less competent by others. I think that you'd be concerned that maybe APRA might become involved and regulatory authorities, that somehow other people are going to become aware of your illness. And for those reasons, I think that it is probably likely that even though across the board patients tend to minimise depression and see it as a weakness, I suspect that in health professionals that is something that is more likely to occur.
Tom, given all of that, how should we approach mental health care for our colleagues but also for ourselves?
I have got an inbox that is literally full of suggestions. Dr. Sue Varner, who's a psychiatrist at the Mount Sinai University Hospital in New York, talked about the 4 M's. And I think that she summarised better, sort of collectively, everything that I've heard from everybody else. She said it's really important to have movement, to exercise every day. She talked about mindfulness, which is being aware about the fact that it's okay to not be okay when the pandemic's out of control. But to select, for example, that you don't watch the news all the time. You might only watch one news broadcast rather than surrounding yourself with bad information. She talked about mastery, which is the importance of doing something fun every day, finding time to take up a hobby or read a book or listen to music. And she talked about meaningful connections and being able to stay connected with people that we know and are friends with. Then I think what's important is that all of us as health professionals should have our own doctor. Every one of us should have a family physician that we go to if we get a skin rash. We should go to if we're worried about having a headache. And we should go to if we're worried about how we're feeling or coping. If I'm asked what is the most important symptom of depression in a busy general practitioner's rooms, it's picking on anhedonia, the lost stability of self-enjoyment. So when you stop enjoying things you normally enjoy. And what I would say to health professionals is if you suddenly reflect and think that you've stopped enjoying listening to music and you can't be bothered reading and you're not enjoying watching anything on television and you can't be bothered playing golf or you don't want to listen to the footy anymore, go and see your doctor. Don't treat yourself. Go and see your doctor. It's so important that you do that. And acknowledge and allow yourself to be one of the 1 in 5 of us who are going to have depression during our lifetime.
It's great advice. I've heard you talking about a 3-legged stool when you talk about managing depression. Can you share that vision with everyone who's listening?
Well, I remember as an undergraduate many years ago learning about the formulation in psychiatry, which we know as a biological, psychological, social paradigm. But that's too hard, I think, to explain to patients. I'd like to think that we're all like a three-legged kitchen stool, where one leg of the stool is our brain chemistry, one leg of the stool is the psychology of the way that we think, and one leg of the stool is the reality of the world in which we live. And I've never met anybody where there wasn't a component of each of those dimensions that was not present to some degree in the patient. And it predicates treatment, because treatment is identifying where one needs to intervene. So, for example, if I have somebody whose social world is utterly chaotic because they're working as a busy doctor in the pandemic, part of what I'm going to do is the four M's that I was talking about earlier, about work-life balance, about recognising that it's okay to be not okay because you're disempowered in this awful pandemic thing we're in. But it might be that I need to think about what medicines I'm going to need to use biologically. So it's about the question of the formulation, which really is, why is this person here with these particular symptoms at this particular time, to facilitate me being able to tailor an individualised treatment for them.
Can I move on to that psychological leg of the stool, as you were saying? What psychological therapies are we talking about, and what options are there? And there are things that GPs can do.
There was a lovely study done by a whole number of universities in America with Sonia Dimigen was the lead author, that looked at the different psychotherapies and was able to show clearly that behavioural activation, just being active, is incredibly powerful psychotherapy, and it's underutilised because it sounds so simple. But sometimes simple is the best thing to do. Get your patients up. And I say to patients, I don't want you to do it because you feel like it. Do it and you'll feel like it once you've done it. You'll be glad you did it. And that's the beginning to be able to move forward.
It's great advice. Tom, let's move on to that third leg of your stool. What should we be considering with pharmacological treatment options?
I think that what we have to do is to make sure that we use antidepressants that work and that the patient is able to tolerate. I'm guided by a meta-analysis that was published in The Lancet in 2018 by Andrea Cipriani and her group, where they looked at 21 antidepressants. They noted that all of them were more effective than placebo, which is obvious because they all get regulatory approval. But they also noted in particular that two of the antidepressants, agomelatine and fluoxetine, were associated with less dropouts than placebo, which when you think about it is quite remarkable. They did head-to-head comparisons with a range of antidepressants, and from an efficacy point of view, agomelatine, amitriptyline, escitalopram, mirtazapine, paroxetine, venlafaxine and vortioxetine were more effective than the other antidepressants in the study. And what I'm doing when I'm using a treatment is I'm balancing the need to treat versus the side effects of treatment. That's what we do as doctors.
You know, I hear, Tom, a lot of talk about that shared decision-making sort of structure. Talk us through what that actually means on the ground. How do we do it?
The days of saying to a patient, I'm the doctor, here's a pill, you take it, have gone. These days, the patient needs to know what's the chance of the medication working, and they need to know what to be watching for. We know that only about 50% of people get the second repeat filled of an antidepressant prescription. I've often said, if I ask men, what is the side effect you least want? It's sexual side effects. And if I ask women, what is the side effect you least want? It's usually weight gain. And, you know, that sounds a bit of a cliche, but in fact, in my practice, that would be relatively true. Sexual side effects and weight gain are the two things that patients dislike intensely. And for that reason, one of the medications I use commonly is agomelatine, which is a melatonergic agonist. It's got a short half-life, doesn't have sexual side effects or weight gain, and patients like drugs that don't have those side effects.
That's interesting, Tom, because I actually prescribe quite a lot of agomelatine as well, but some of my patients are concerned about cost. How do you have that part of the discussion with your patients?
If I'm going to use a drug like agomelatine, which perhaps costs about $60 a box, then we know from an outpatient study of patients who were seeing psychiatrists in Germany that of the patients taking agomelatine. Two-thirds were taking 25 milligrams or one tablet a day, and one-third were taking 50 milligrams or two tablets a day. And there's no evidence that you need to use bigger doses. So I say to patients, the worst scenario would be that you're a responder and your depression gets better with minimal side effects or no side effects, and you're paying for two tablets a day, which is about $120 a month, for example. And I had a lovely pensioner, a woman on a disability pension, say to me when I was putting this to her, she said, if this drug works like you tell me it should, that's the price of a cappuccino a day. If somebody smokes cigarettes, I would suggest that it's the price of about one cigarette a day. So if they go from being a 20 cigarette a day person to a 19 cigarette a day person, then they can afford agomelatine. So it's about recognizing that for many people, the price of being well is absolutely something that they're prepared to pay, providing they have a medication that is efficacious and that they can tolerate.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Tom, it's been a great discussion. Thanks for talking to us about the management of depression and reminding us that as healthcare professionals, we also need to look after our own health. Can you summarise what we've been talking about for the GPs who are listening to us?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to remember to look after ourselves. We are absolutely useless if we're sick. So it behoves us all the time, and even more so in a pandemic, to realise that we are at risk of depression just as anybody else. And even in a time like we've just gone through for the last 12 months, we're at a higher risk. So we should have a doctor in our corner. We should all have our own family GP that we go to, not only for our mood symptoms, but to check our blood pressure and all those other things that we tell our patients to do, and we should be practicing what we preach. It's important then to individualise treatment, to take the patient and not just say, well, you've got depression, we'll treat you with this treatment. It's looking at the patient and using a biological, kind of psychological, social, three-legged stool to understand why they've got the depression at this particular time. And then finally discussing with the patient the benefits and the risks of any treatment. Everything we do is risk versus benefit. And we need to do that with the patient who may well be a fellow health professional.
Yeah, they're all good points. For me, Tom, I've been scribbling down as we've been chatting. I'm going to remember the three-legged stool, which I love, the four M's that are absolutely brilliant. Dr. Tom Patterson, thanks so much for joining us on Drive Time Medical.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Please note the PBS information for Valdoxan, agomelatine. This product is not listed on the PBS. Note, liver function tests need to be completed at baseline 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months, and 6 months. Please review the product information before prescribing. The product information and substantiating references can be obtained from the Drive Time Radio website. This interview was proudly organised by Servier, produced April 2021.